And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. The new Alaska ferry, Hubbard, carried its first passengers yesterday. The boat, which is built in the Ketchikan shipyard, is the latest addition to the Marine Highway fleet and now links Juneau, Haines, and Skagway every day but Mondays. KHNS's Alonda Premenil got a tour of the new boat on its first stop in Haines.
Getting the MV Hubbard online has matched the slow pace of its namesake glacier. Construction started in 2014, and it took 4 years to complete. Then, due to some quirks of management and planning, the Marine Highway System decided to change course and upgrade the boat with crew quarters to allow it to run continuously.
This is all steel deck here. They added these modules on. All the unlicensed crew lives on this deck.
Captain Gabe Bayless points to 40 feet of living quarters that have been added to the upper deck. In addition, a crew lunchroom has been converted to sleeping quarters. The ship's passenger capacity didn't change. It was built to hold 300.
Well, we can go take a look at the galley. We're trying to make it work. It's a different configuration, and it's kind of condensed in size.
The galley is tight, but the new stainless steel shines, and Bayless is confident that once a permanent cook gets assigned to the boat, some warm meals can be provided to passengers.
I don't anticipate this vessel ever being able to serve hot meals to 300 people. But perhaps on the lighter loads, we will be able to serve hot meals.
Bayless says with a full load of passengers, the new galley will turn out soups, salads, and sandwiches that will be sold at the cafeteria. Adding crew quarters cost $15 million and delayed the boat's maiden voyage until this week. On Tuesday morning, the Hubbard sailed up the Lynn Canal with about 70 passengers on board. But its long-awaited docking in Haines was further delayed. The ferry Columbia was carrying an unusual load of heavy equipment and was late leaving the Haines ferry terminal. The Hubbard's crew had no choice but to circle around Lutac Inlet for an hour and a half until the Columbia left. Finally, about 9 years and 90 minutes after construction began, the MV Hubbard let out its first load of passengers.
On shore, please bring your COVID ID and boarding pass to show on reboarding, although I would not venture far because...
Haines resident Tom Faverty was one of them.
Except for the delay at the end, it was a beautiful voyage. The boat was very clean and very well organized, and it's nice to have another ship in the Upper Lynn Canal. We need it.
The Hubbard can hold more than 50 cars. Its top speed is about the same as an electric scooter. It's 50 feet longer than the ferry Leconte. The Marine System has said that bringing the Hubbard online in the Lynn Canal will free the Leconte to increase ferry service in other Southeast communities. AMHS has had difficulties recently hiring and retaining staff. Captain Bayless says a ship like the Hubbard is well positioned to address the problem.
We're going to have a smaller crew size, which I personally kind of like. It makes it feel like a more efficient operation and then also a closer-knit crew.
Bayless says having a new ship will improve morale. He says although he loves the 60-year-old Malaspina, a recently retired ship in the fleet, he could see that working on a slowly decaying vessel had an impact on the crew's energy. He points to an area on the Hubbard's deck where a crew will be able to have barbecues when in the shipyard.
It's a great opportunity. If you focus on the good of these ships, they're great ships. And the things that are bad or a little off, I know are going to improve in time. So it's great to be part of it's more of a living thing and a growing thing.
The car deck of the Hubbard is spacious, wide open. This allows the crew to quickly load and unload in port. Bayless has to cut our tour short when his radio announces the ship is ready to leave for Skagway. The turnaround time in Haines was only 20 minutes. Bayless says he expects by tonight they will have made up much of the delay the boat just incurred. For KHNS, I'm Alan de Premenil.
It's shaping up to be another devastating year for communities on the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers that used to rely on king and chum salmon as the mainstay of their diet. Salmon advocates want to change the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the nation's primary fishery law, so that federal fisheries managers give more consideration to subsistence salmon fishermen. Congresswoman Mary Peltola campaigned on it. Now, though, she acknowledges Congress is unlikely to approve changes to the law this year or next. So she and other salmon advocates are trying a different avenue, reshaping the law already on the books. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Salmon advocates point fingers at the ocean-going trawl fleet. The trawlers catch thousands of king and chum salmon in the Bering Sea in their nets by accident as they fish for pollock. It's called bycatch. Meanwhile, along the Yukon, native communities that have relied on salmon for thousands of years weren't allowed to catch a single Chinook for the dinner table last year or the year before. Peltola says it's galling.
I think that we should be having honest conversations about the fact that it seems like subsistence fishermen are getting zero consideration and there is zero thought about the management implications when they are getting 0% of the resource.
Peltola, speaking in a recent video call arranged by a fisheries consulting firm, said she'd still like to change the law to put two Alaska tribal representatives on the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, among other amendments, but she doesn't think that's realistic anytime soon. Instead, she's looking at what are called national standards set in the Magnuson-Stevens Act and hopes to change how they're interpreted.
If the only change we can make in the 118th Congress is to take another look at these national standards, we've got to do it, and we've got to do it now.
Those national standards are like fundamental management commandments. They say things like fish allocations must be fair and equitable, and bycatch must be minimized to the extent practicable. Those are refined by guidelines, and now the National Marine Fisheries Service has announced it's begun revising three of those guidelines.
Oh, it's totally wonky. Yeah.
Hannah Heimbuch knows how dry this sounds. She's a commercial salmon fisherman and policy consultant. Heimbuch says it's not a quick fix, but changing the guidelines can reset the priorities for the North Pacific Fishery Management Council so that it's more responsive to nearshore and in-river fishermen.
I think that it's an opportunity to kind of be frank about some of the ways that the management plans as they exist now aren't able to manage bycatch in a way that is sustainable in the long term.
The amount of salmon in terms of numbers relative to the numbers of pollock we catch is de minimis.
Brett Payne is the executive director of United Catcher Boats, representing about 70 trawlers working in the Bering Sea, Aleutians, and Gulf of Alaska. He says the Bering Sea fleet is already successful at limiting bycatch.
For us to catch 1.2 million metric tons of pollock and to only catch 6,000 to 9,000 Chinook, we say we've done a pretty good job.
6,000 to 9,000 Chinook. Payne acknowledges it sounds like a lot to Yukon fishermen when they can't catch any. But he says research shows a lot of those fish weren't bound for the YK Delta, and not every fish was going to survive to maturity anyway. He says trawl bycatch is not to blame for the collapse of Western Alaska salmon runs. Salmon advocates say several factors are harming salmon populations, chiefly climate change. But they say that makes it even more important to take action where possible, like against bycatch. The National Marine Fisheries Service said in a Federal Register announcement that it's accepting public comment on new guidelines through September 12th. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Teachers in the second largest school district in Alaska have voted to authorize a strike. The contract between the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District and the Matsu Education Association expired last July. The two sides began negotiating in January of 2022, but were unable to reach an agreement. Vicki Hewitt is president of the Matsu Education Association, which represents roughly 3,400 teachers and support staff.
They want our health care information. The Public Education Health Trust protects that information. If we move to Primera, they will have all of that information. We don't want them to have our health care information.
Hewitt says the union and school district could not agree on two issues, the district's attempt to move to a national health insurance provider and the district's proposal to increase teacher pay by 2% over a three-year contract, which Hewitt says does not keep up with inflation. 2 weeks ago, the district made their last best offer. Last week, the teachers union voted to approve a strike. According to the union statement on Monday, more than 90% of teachers voted in favor of a strike. The statement says teachers would not go on strike until the fall if an agreement is not reached over the summer.
we don't want to go on strike. We don't want to put our community through that. Our community has already been through so much with the decisions that the school district and the school board have made in the last 2 years. We don't want to do this.
She says MATSU teachers have never gone on strike, and she hopes they still won't have to. The first day of classes are August 15th. This is KTOO.